This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen, and we got a fun show coming up for you today. We're going to be talking a lot of what happened last night. Big win for the Denver Nuggets over OKC. Quickly talk about the hockey results. We had an elimination. We had another one move on to a game six. A little short day in baseball, but we're also going to do play it or pass it, NBA style with Celtics versus Knicks. Bill Finley is going to join us to preview the Preakness. And then we're going to talk a little baseball there. A lot going on here, Nick Whalen. Let's talk, first of all, about what happened last night in the NBA. Let's talk a little PGA, actually. PGA Championship. We got a live leaderboard going on here. Busy round. It's an odd leader with Jonathan Vegas taking the lead with a pretty good size lead as well.
Yeah, kind of picking up where he left off yesterday. He is only 3 under today, Jeff. Came out, had a par on number one. Bogey number two has been clean since then. 3 birdies on the back nine today for Vegas. So he's at 10 under, outright leader. Matthew Pavone sitting at 6 under. We got a group of guys at 5 under. Max Homa, Luke Donald, Alex Smalley, Ryan Gerard. Good to see Max Homa, by the way, back in the mix, Jeff. Felt like he turned the corner at the Masters, just had that brutal end of last season, brutal start to this season, and good to see him kind of carrying that momentum from Augusta into the second major. You know, what's interesting to me, Jeff, is that Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, you know, essentially just teed off on number one. Their tee time, I think, was 147 Eastern today. We just mentioned Vegas is 10 under. He has an 8-shot lead currently on Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler still the odds on favorite to win the tournament at DraftKings plus 330.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. And, you know, speaking of Scheffler, let's just break that out right now. I thought that was interesting there with Scotty. There was Mudgate. You know, there is both he and Xander had perfect drives on 18. A little mud on the ball, though, when they hit their they thought they hit their approach shots flush, and instead it veered left into the water. Ended up with each having doubles. And after their, you know, there were some complaints about the lack of lift, clean, and place rule here just because of all the rain they had had earlier in the week. What was your reaction to that?
Well, it just adds more vitriol, I think, to this general sentiment even before the tournament started, right? Everybody's criticizing the course. Everybody's saying, it doesn't really feel like a real major. Rory McIlroy, who's had great success at Quail Hollow, even had some negative things to say about the general setup of the tournament. So I think players were already, you know, expecting the worst coming in. And then now we have Mudgate on top of this. And I think it was Scheffler who said, you know, he doesn't expect it to get any better in day two. He's like, you know, it's going to start drying out, but it's going to be kind of that perfect mix of moisture and dryness where we have kind of the worst of the mud balls on day two. So we'll see how much it impacts Scotty. You know, reading those quotes yesterday, as somebody who golfs a lot, Jeff, at a very poor clip compared to Scotty Scheffler, I just don't even understand this. You know, well, I like to be able to control the ball in the air. Like I've never felt that, right? Like the ball just hits the club and it goes where it wants to go. I can't quite identify with Scottie Scheffler, you know, losing control of the ball when it's 100 yards off of his club.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think sometimes we feel like golf is relatable. It's something, oh, I can do that. Oh, I could do that. Oh, no. You know, I've had a birdie before. But then you realize that the gradations are a lot different than we think. No one would think, oh, I can take on Jason Tatum one-on-one. Maybe I could right now, today, but even then, probably not. But, you know, no one thinks that they're going to tackle Derrick Henry. Only the delusional think that. But people think all the time, oh, I'm just if I work hard, I could be pretty close to these pros. No, there's a huge physical difference. There's a huge leap in talent difference there. Same thing happens true in tennis. You've heard about the Serena, take a point off Serena at her peak challenge. I don't know if have or not, but that was a debate. And, you know, us 40 plus males tend to think, oh yeah, I've got a good serve. No, she would smash your serve, dude. No,
yes,
it would not happen there. But, you know, you get this all the time. And I just love these sort of like common man debates. And, you know, that, like you're saying about the ball and the mud on the ball. Like for us, first of all, we wouldn't hit it, you know, to the point where it would really matter. But if we did, we'd have the same problems.
I guess my argument is that I'm having those problems no matter what. The ball just kind of has its own mind once it's in the air. And, you know, again, it speaks to just how deep in the weeds, quite literally, these guys are at times with every single aspect of their swing. And I think you do bring up a good point. It's funny you bring this up, because I was actually just thinking about this the other night, of how, you know, how unique golf is in that it is, you know, really one of the only true individual sports. Like, you know, you think of tennis as an individual sport, the result of a tennis match still heavily depends on what your opponent is doing, right? Golf, it's really all you. It is all you. And, you know, if you go out in theory and put up 18 consecutive birdies, yeah, you're probably going to win the tournament. Nothing that anyone else is doing on the course is going to impact that. But your general point rings very true here, Jeff, which is that these guys are on a different level than the average golfer. They're probably 7, 8, 9 levels above the average.
Absolutely. So updated betting odds, you said Scotty plus 320 to win. Vegas, the leader, yep, plus 500. So he's second on the betting board now. He's got a 4-stroke lead, so I get it. Bryson DeChambeau, who finished with the 300 today, is 3-under for the tournament, is third at plus 750. Nobody else better than 1,800, plus 1,800 right now. Mm-hmm. And that's Max Homa. John Rahm's at 22. Alex Smalley is at plus 2,000. So, yeah, interesting. Not some of the names we'd expect there at the top of the leaderboard, which is leading to these interesting updated betting odds. All right, let's move on over to the NBA. The Nuggets just played a fantastic game to beat the Thunder, not just to cover, but, you know, just to win outright and win comfortably in the second half. Really impressive performance by Denver in the fourth quarter in particular.
Really, really impressive doing that at home. We knew they would bring, you know, their best effort in this game six. And, you know, we'll see what happens now on Sunday afternoon in game seven. Interesting that that line is still shaded pretty heavily toward OKC, but not as heavily as it was earlier in the series, where they were, you know, 9-10 point favorites, Thunder sitting as 7-point home favorites in game seven. But you didn't want to be in this spot if you're OKC, right? I think, you know, the way they were able to take care of business in games four and five, you know, really felt like they tired the Nuggets out. You get this incredible Jokic effort in game five, they still lose. And, you know, OKC, I think, lost whatever momentum it had last night after being outscored by 26 points in the two previous fourth quarters. You know, Denver essentially felt like it took control for most of the second half. You know, obviously they won the fourth quarter last night, but it was really the third quarter where they built that lead. They gave themselves a cushion. It allowed them to turn it over on like four possessions in a row late in the game. Yeah. And, you know, OKC, Jalen Williams, man, another brutal game for him. You know, missed the biggest shot of the night when the Thunder were making that mini run. You know, he has a wide open look on the wing, and I think that would have cut it to 6 or 7, ends up rimming out. I don't want to, you know, overshadow what he did as a playmaker, as a rebounder, as a defender. I thought he was really good in those areas last night, but you can't keep living like this, man. You can't keep living with your second best player, a guy who was an all-star this year, giving you these horrendous performances over and over. 3 of 16 from the field last night. I mean, he's shooting 33% in this series.
Yeah, even after that that late missed three, which you're absolutely right. That was a critical shot. I think they added at 9, could have gone down to 6. But, yeah, you know, they're like wide open three. But even beforehand, they were kind of highlighting that this has been a rough game, and it's hard not to have anybody else come along. I mean, even, you know, you heard what SGA was saying in previous games. It's like, it's a team game. It's not a one man game. Well, you know, the team part of it kind of failed a little bit there. Plus, it was the Strother game. We got to talk about this. This is a player, you know, I don't think we mentioned him once in the preview. I don't think we've mentioned him this entire series. Massive game last night.
They said it on the telecast right at the end. I mean, it was truly the Julian Strother game. We had the Luke Kornet game two nights ago, and then, of course, we get the Strother game. I mean, he's been on the fringes, to put it nicely, of this rotation in the playoffs. He's picked up a couple DNP CDs. He barely played at all in round one against the Clippers, and I think the fact that they threw him out there as much as they did just speaks to the fact that they don't have any other options. You know, Russell Westbrook didn't really have it last night. You know, he was brutal in the first half, came in, immediately committed 3 turnovers, made some bad defensive plays. I actually did think his energy in the third quarter when he came back in played a big role in the Nuggets building that lead, but they needed something off the bench. OKC has had the much better bench effort throughout this series, and Strother coming in, splashing 3 3-pointers, hit a couple of layups, you know, just giving them something on offense. You know, they played Peyton Watson off the bench. He goes 1 of 7 from the field. He's really more of a defensive specialist at this point. And look, with Michael Porter Jr. playing through that shoulder injury, Aaron Gordon did almost nothing offensively last night. You know, really good game from Jamal Murray given the circumstances, but you could tell even from the jump that he was gassed. He wasn't at 100%. Denver needed somebody to step up, and lo and behold, it was Julian Strother.
Indeed. Denver is a 7-point underdog for game seven in on Sunday. Total of 212.5. Your reaction to the spread and the total?
Not really surprised. You know, OKC continues to garner a ton of respect, and like we said, it's a little bit of a shorter number than it was earlier in the series. As far as the total goes, you know, up to 212.5 now at DraftKings, almost the same total that we're going to have tonight for Celtics Knicks. I mean, yeah, these last couple of games, yeah, obviously last night went over. We went we had 217, I think it was, for game five, and then we went way under in game four. As these series go along, you know, I tend to lean under. You know, these teams learn each other. You know, you start trying out different things defensively. You have a better gauge of what works and what doesn't. You know, the adage in general in game sevens is that they tend to be tighter. They tend to be slower paced. You don't tend to see big time shooting performances, teams shooting 45% from three in game seven. So my initial lean on that would be the under on 212.5. And look, I think OKC wins at home, but if you're giving me seven with Denver, I would jump on that.
All right. We'll talk a little bit more about that, obviously, coming up. But we're also talking New York and Boston coming up tonight. But first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on. You deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use. Rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Briefly, Carolina eliminated Washington yesterday. So much for my speculation that, hey, Washington had the best record in hockey. Why aren't they a higher favorite? I guess that's why. So we'll find out. We'll talk more with Paul Bruno and AJ Schultz next week about the next series. Play it or pass it, Boston, New York, coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. It's that time again. It's our favorite segment, Play It or Pass It, Knicks Celtics style here. Is this, first of all, before we go to get into individual props, I've heard this described as the biggest Knicks game in recent history. Are you buying into that hype?
I think by default, that's probably correct, right? I mean, this is a team that obviously has been to the second round each of the last couple of years, but you know, I don't think they've ever been in this kind of position where, you know, you really felt like that they had a great chance to close out, you know, a team that is better than them. And look, there's perhaps a reason for that with the Tatum injury, but I think what makes this even bigger is you're looking ahead to a potential Eastern Conference Finals matchup against the Indiana Pacers, right? It's not like there's another team like Boston where you feel like, you know, it's going to take a monumental effort to beat them. It's, if we can close this out, we're going to be favored to end up in the NBA Finals. So I think that is part of the thought process here. You know, I think if you want to go back to like that one really good Carmelo year when the Knicks won 54 games, like that was 2013, they made the second round that year, but that was also the second of the two Heat championships. Like, you knew LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh were lurking at some point. I think deep down, even the biggest Knicks fan would tell you that they probably knew that wasn't going to be a finals team. I think it's because of the path, you know, not only the opportunity that now sits in front of them to win this game tonight, but what it could mean as far as being favored in round two and you know, finally finding their way back to the finals for the first time since 1999. So I agree with that. I think there's logic behind it.
Yeah, I just kind of I was checking it out on Basketball Reference. It's like, oh yeah, lost conference semifinals, lost conference first round. Yep. Yeah, they haven't made to a conference final since the 89-99 and 99-2000 teams. Yeah, and when they were regular, all that. It was funny, like under the Van Gundy and Riley years, every year. But you know what? Those were all 25-plus years ago. So yeah, I think the line is most important game in 25 years. I'll buy that. I will play that. Such as the case may be. All right, let's look at individual props from this game. Start off with Josh Hart, over 15 and plus points, plus 145. Play it or pass it, Nick Whalen.
So I am going to pass this one, but I will say this is decent value. It's decent value. You're getting this at plus 140. You just need Hart to score at least 15 points. Now, you know, in game five, he you know, hit 5 3-pointers, finished with 24 points. I don't know that he's, you know, hitting 5 threes again. He has not been that type of shooter throughout the playoffs really whatsoever. I thought he actually did a good job of keeping the Knicks in that game, you know, while Boston was shooting it so well in the first half. But again, Josh Hart is not somebody who routinely is hitting more than two or maybe three 3-pointers. He's had 15 or fewer points in 9 of 11 games so far in these playoffs. I would stay away from Josh Hart tonight. You know, even the rebounds and the assist props for Hart, you know, he's been a little bit more inconsistent in this postseason than he was throughout the regular season. You know, he's had 6, 6, 9, and 7 rebounds over his last 4 games. He had previously had double digits in 4 of his last 5. So he's a really unpredictable player, I think, as we look ahead to game 6. So we're going to start off with a pass here.
All right. Very good. Next one. Let's do Derek White. Over 25 points. No Jason Tatum in the lineup. No Porzingis. Mm-hmm. It's at plus 70. Derek White, 25 plus points. Play it or pass it.
Well, if you think that the Boston Celtics are going to win this game at Madison Square Garden, that might require a 25 plus point night from Derek White. And look, at plus 170, I think that's enough value that I have to consider it. No Tatum, no Porzingis. He's active, but I'm not really counting him as part of the rotation right now. And with those two guys off the floor, we see Derek White take a 6.3 percentage point jump in usage rate. He averages 5.8 more points per 36, 3.9 more field goal attempts per 36, almost 2 more 3-point attempts per 36. So again, reasonable price at plus 170. I think the Knicks play better defense on him. I think they make a point. Like, look, we can't let Derek White get loose in the way that he did in game 5. He went 7 of 13 from 3, also got to the line 11 times. So this is priced at plus 170 for a reason. I think it is relatively unlikely, but hey, look, I don't want to start with 2 straight passes here. We'll take this. I think we get a close game if nothing else.
All right. We'll see if he gets that whistle. That's the thing is, I don't think he gets that whistle he got in game 5. Yeah. That's the thing that kind of makes me worry about that. So we'll see. And it is definitely a gradation defensive change. Speaking about that, before we get to the next prop, I want to get your opinion on this. We didn't get a chance to talk about that in segment 1. It's at Knicks minus 2.5. Total in this game is at 211.5. Strong opinions on either of these?
Strong opinion, no. I do lean Knicks, though. I lean Knicks. I think it's going to be really difficult for Boston to summon that same effort level, that same energy level. I think they really fed off of the home crowd. It could have gone either way, right? In light of the Jason Tatum injury, but I think it's going to be really tough for them to replicate that kind of energy and that kind of shooting effort on the road, right? And, you know, defensively, obviously you look at the final score and it's like, okay, they won by 25. They held the Knicks to 102. You know, the Knicks actually played a pretty decent offensive game, you know, 111.2 offensive rating, considering they only hit 12 threes. They only shot 35% from the field. So I think there has to be a little bit of built-in shooting regression for Boston, 22 of 49 from beyond the arc in the last game. And I think we do see a little bit of progression for the New York Knicks. I mean, OG Anunoby can't go 1 of 12 again. I think you probably get a better effort out of Mikal Bridges. So I feel a little bit more strongly about the side than I do the total, which is still hanging pretty low considering how high scoring these last 2 games have been. But give me the Knicks tonight.
Yeah, difficult to summon and maintain that energy that you had in game 5. And meanwhile, it'll be a lot easier for the Knicks to draw energy from MSG. It's going to be hopping tonight. You Absolutely. Know that. I think you're right in sharing that there. Jaylen Brown, let's go to him. 6.5 assists. Do you take the, we're going to say under 6.5 assists. That's at minus 130. Play it or pass it.
Yeah, this is a tough one because, you know, I was on with Kelly and Gil earlier this morning, and, you know, I said I like the over 13.5 rebounds plus assists, but, you know, the more I dug in on the assist numbers, I think I actually would lean under on 6.5, and that doesn't mean I don't like the 13.5. I still think there's plenty of meat on the bone for Jaylen Brown as a rebounder. You know, we talked about removing Tatum from the mix and, you know, Brown being the number one guy to pick up the slack. So Brown obviously had 12 assists in game 5. That was by far his most in any game this season. It was his first double-digit assist game of the year. He only had 7 other games all season with at least 8 assists. And the Celtics converted 12 of his 18 potential assists. That is well above expectation. Usually like 50% is pretty good, right? So they shot it really well. I don't know if they're going to do that again. I would not be surprised if we see that assist number regress. So I would stay away from this one. I'm not saying I love the under. I would just look to tie in the rebounds, maybe even look at a points plus rebounds plus assists to give yourself a little bit more leeway.
All right. We're going to talk a little Mikal Bridges coming up next. But first, smarter bets start here and last all year with VSiN Pro. Sign up on an annual subscription and get 14 months for just $199 when you use promo code PRO. That's 2 extra months free for under 50 cents a day. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get instant access to daily best bets, including PGA best bets from Kelly Bidlin and Wes Reynolds, who've cashed multiple winners this season, and Preakness picks from Mike Somich, who nailed the Derby superfecta. Exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus full access to VSiN.com's analytics, betting trends, and expert breakdowns. That's sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe with code PRO, VSIN.com/subscribe. Michael Bridges, over 4.5 rebounds. It's set at +124. Play it or pass it, Nick.
Yeah, you know, I think Mikal Bridges is a huge key for the New York Knicks tonight. I think he has, in a lot of ways, kind of dictated how these games have gone for them so far in the postseason. You know, Mikal Bridges showed up huge earlier in the series in game four, had his best game, I thought, of the postseason. And usually when he plays well, the Knicks tend to play well. They tend to win games, especially at home. You know, the rebounding for him has been kind of all over the map. You know, he's had a bunch of like 2-3 rebound games. He's had some 7-8 rebound games. So this is one that I don't feel that strongly about, but I do think the minutes will be there. I think this will be a close game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout one way or the other. And knowing who the head coach is for the New York Knicks, as long as Mikal Bridges is not in foul trouble, I think he'll play enough minutes where this makes some sense at +124. I'm also looking at Mikal Bridges over 14.5 points. I think that to me is maybe a slightly safer bet. He is somebody that shoots the three, Jeff, at about a 7 percentage point better clip at home than he does on the road. So I think he's somebody that feeds off of that energy at home. Mikal Bridges, if I like the Knicks to win this game tonight, I think it goes hand in hand with Bridges having a solid game.
Certain names always are a mental block for me. Mikal versus Michael is one of them there. Mikal Bridges there. All right. Drew Holiday, over 21 plus PRA, -1.5. Play it or pass it.
Yeah, so Holiday went well over this number in game five. 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. Took 5 free throws, however. Did only make 2 of those. You know, they've had a lot of just bad free throw shooting, I feel like, throughout these playoffs from a lot of guys who tend to be decent. And Holiday's been all over the map throughout his career. Some years he's great, some years he's not. He also went 2 of 3 from beyond the arc. Prior to that, however, he had gone under this number in 3 straight. And when you look at some of the advanced, you know, on-off-court data, yeah, he picks up a little bit of usage, a little bit of a boost statistically when Tatum's off the court, but it's not nearly as dramatic as it is for Jaylen Brown or Derek White. So I think it's going to be difficult for Drew Holiday, you know, 2 games in 48 hours replicating that performance. I will pass on the 21 plus points, plus rebounds, plus assists.
All right, very good. We're going to talk Preakness coming up next. Can't believe it's already here, 2 weeks later after the Derby. Bill Finley's going to hop on the Progressive guest line to help us preview it on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. The Preakness is Saturday, 2 weeks after the Kentucky Derby. Here to help us preview the Preakness is Bill Finley, who joined us on the Progressive guest line for the Derby as well. Bill, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for sharing your expertise with us. I think we'll have Bill here shortly. So, Nick, we'll just start off with it before we bring in Bill. One of the things that was noteworthy, I thought, about what happened is that we don't have the Kentucky Derby winner sovereignty in this race. And that was announced pretty immediately after the Derby. This is the 5th time in 7 years that we don't even have the chance at a Triple Crown. The Kentucky Derby winner isn't racing in the Preakness.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, you know, the trainer for Sovereignty, Bill Mott, you know, was asked about this, of course. And, you know, he essentially told reporters that, you know, they're prioritizing Sovereignty's, quote, long-term interest, which to me sounds like the horse version of load management, I suppose. Yeah. But it's like, does it get any bigger than this, right? Like, you win the Kentucky Derby, you know, in theory, have a chance at the Triple Crown, and you're bowing out of this voluntarily. There doesn't appear to be, you know, an obvious injury. You know, you're certainly concerned about the workload on the horse, but it's interesting to me that you would essentially just pass on this opportunity for immortality. So it just begs the question, like, has the run for the Triple Crown kind of lost its appeal?
Yeah, it's that, I think, and I want to ask Bill this when he's on too, because I've been reading up on it, but I'm no expert, that, you know, some of its training methods, some of its purses and other races, things have changed a little bit there. So I wonder what's happened in there and what can we do about it, if anything, or maybe the answer is not to do anything because it is the Triple Crown. I believe we have Bill Finley here now. You can catch Bill on Down the Stretch on SiriusXM. Bill joined us for the Kentucky Derby 2 weeks ago. Bill, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good. Even though I didn't have the Derby winner, I'm going to try to come back and make some money tomorrow at Pimlico.
All right, great. Well, lead story is sovereignty isn't there. Fifth time in 7 years that we haven't had a Kentucky Derby winner there. Only three of the horses that were of the 19 horses that were in the Derby are at the Preakness. And I know there's a certain attrition rate, but how unusual is this that we're losing all these Kentucky Derby winners? What's changed to make so many of them choose not to attend the Preakness?
Well, 20, 30 years ago would have been highly unusual. Virtually every horse that ran in the Derby and ran a decent race came back and ran in the Preakness. But the modern trainer, and for reasons I really don't understand, they insist that their horses need 5 or 6 weeks in between races. So you have a Triple Crown series that goes back to the early 1900s that was made for horses of that era. I was like, one of my favorite stories, in 1948, Citation won the Derby, the Preakness, and then the trainer didn't want to wait all that time for the Belmont and ran him in between in the Jersey Derby before he won that. It's one of my pet peeves. I think it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, and it's hurting the sport, and something needs to be done. It needs to be fixed.
Well, in your opinion, Bill, what is the fix?
Sorry. Well,
and it's not just me. The main problem is the trainers don't want to run their horses back in 2 weeks. And these top class horses like Sovereignty never again, and never in their career will they run back in 2 weeks. People say don't mess with tradition, but the real tradition of the Triple Crown is that it's supposed to bring together the very best horses to run against each other three times in three terrific races. The Preakness has now become an obvious weak link to the Triple Crown, and the answer is to space the races out. And I'm not talking about 1 week. What I would do if I were Czar of Racing, it would be the first Saturday May would be the Derby, first Saturday in June would be the Preakness, and the first Saturday in July would be the Belmont. Some people think instead it should be the first Saturday in May for the Derby, Memorial Day for the Preakness, and July 4th for the Belmont. Either one of those was fine, and it would give the Triple Crown an immediate shot in the arm. I mean, Kentucky Derby has never been more popular, but now, you know, without the Derby winner in this race, you know, the average man on the street probably doesn't care very much.
All right, Bill, let's get down to brass tacks and talk a little bit about what we'll see on Saturday. So you look at the forecast in the area, supposed to get some rain tonight, perhaps some rain overnight, maybe even a little bit on Saturday morning. How is that going to impact the track? How does it impact how you're betting this race?
It won't impact how I'm betting the race. I want to see, I looked for the weather report. I know it's been raining a lot in Baltimore, but last I saw, they're not expecting a lot of rain tomorrow. So if they really work on the track, they should have it in pretty good condition. And Journalism, who's everybody's pick, is the favorite, ran very well in the slop in the Kentucky Derby, and he ran second. So that tells you it won't be a problem for him. And it's just one more reason why most people are picking this horse. And he's going to be a heavy favorite tomorrow.
Yeah, there's a Baffert horse on the rail, goal-oriented, didn't run the Derby. Is getting a little bit of buzz. Sandman's like the second betting favorite. We talked a little bit about in the Derby about post position versus speed of the race. How does that apply here with the Preakness with the smaller field?
It's not nearly as important as it is in the Derby, but it is important. I'm glad you asked talked about goal-oriented. Because since he drew the one post, and also because Baffert likes to have speed horses, he likes to send his horses to the lead. I think this horse is going to definitely go for the front end. And that's going to maybe set things up for a closer, because Clever Again, who would be my second pick in the race, is another horse with a lot of early speed. And if they go after each other early, that's going to really set things up for Journalism, who doesn't come from way back. He'll be fourth or fifth early. Another horse that Wayne Lucas, the immortal Wayne Lucas, is talking about having American Promise go to the lead. So there could be a pretty fast pace in here, but Journalism doesn't need a fast pace in front of him. He's good enough to get the job done. But this other horse, Clever Again, I have until tonight when I send in my picks to Thoroughbred Daily News website to change my mind. I might go for Clever again. He's a very intriguing horse.
More from our guy, Bill Finley, in a moment. But first, if you're interested in betting the Preakness, you could do it with First Bet and you'll get rewarded. New customers could use the promo code VSIN200 to score a 20% rebate on all wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. That's win or lose. You will get paid back. Download the First Bet app or visit first.com/bet and use that promo code VSIN200 to get started today. That's first.com, 1st.com/bet. And again, use that promo code VSIN200. Bill Finley, you know him from down the stretch on SiriusXM. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Bill, yeah, we talked about the size of the field, we talked about the conditions. What are the other big differences between this race and the Derby? You're talking to a horse racing novice here. I'll put the cards on the table. What do we need to know? How do you go about betting this race differently than you would the Run for the Roses?
Well, the obvious difference is the amount of horses into the race. And the Kentucky Derby, though it wasn't so bad this year, is normally a race where a lot of horses get into trouble. And the winner is usually the horse that stays out of trouble and gets a clean trip, which journalism managed to do in the Kentucky Derby. But it first of all, I mean, the main thing is not nearly as good a race. I mean, and especially because of what we've been talking about. You know, years ago, the Preakness was as good as the Derby, as good as the Belmont. It's the weak link in the Triple Crown now. So it's going to be, you know, again, A plus B doesn't always equal C in this game. But if you see that journalism ran second in the Kentucky Derby versus a much better field than the one he's going to be facing on Saturday, it's kind of, you know, handicapping 101 or picking horses for dummies. Why should he lose? As long as he runs back to his last race. Now, you know, getting back to the thing, some people believe that 2 weeks is not enough rest and he'll regress off his Kentucky Derby. But the trainer was confident enough to come back with him, is to me, is a very good sign.
All right, Bill. I love that response too, because I think it's really interesting, because I mean, even though I live pretty close to Santa Anita, I don't go very often. So still learning a lot there. Is there a long shot that you're interested in here?
Well, like I said, Clever again is my other pick, but he will be, might even be second or third choice. So I can't really call him a long shot. You know, I guess it would be American Promise. Because, you know, Wayne Lucas, the legendary 89-year-old trainer, soon to turn 90 years old in September of this year, has had a history of horses running poorly in the Derby and coming back and running much better in the Preakness. I don't know exactly why that would be. I mean, he got beat 38 and a half lengths in the Kentucky Derby, but he did show early speed. Lucas says he's going to send him to the front in this one, which might cause him some problems. But it's based on the trainer. His horses tend to be very erratic. And two starts ago, he won the Virginia Derby by 7 3/4 lengths. It was not a very tough race, but nonetheless, it was a pretty impressive win for him. This is a Wayne Lucas likes this race and he likes to get his horses primed for it. So I would be my long shot American Promise.
Very good. Bill, great stuff as always. Looking forward to listening to you on Down the Stretch, and thanks for joining us today. Talk to you in 3 weeks for the Belmont. Appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, guys. I'd be glad to come on.
That's Bill Finley, everybody. Coming up next on Prop Points, the baseball slate for Friday. You're listening to Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Prop Points, Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, hanging out with you for another 15 minutes, taking you up to the top of the hour. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on the Sports Betting Network. Give you an update on what is going on out at Quail Hollow. Johnny Vegas in the clubhouse now with a 70 on the card, Jeff. So was that 10 under when we gave you an update early in the show? A double on 18 sends Vegas down to 8 under, still got a 2-shot lead, however, over Matthew Pavone. Talked about Max Homa at the top of the show. He's in at 5 under, 64 on the card for Max Homa today. Scottie Scheffler just birdied number three. So he sits at 3 under for the tournament. Still the betting favorite right now over at DraftKings plus 220. Bryson DeChambeau now has leapfrogged Johnny Vegas as well. He is at plus 750.
Yeah, and the odds, I was just going to mention that, you know, Vegas has dropped it in his odds to, you know, I see Vegas now at plus 1,000. I see Rory now, the fourth betting favorite at plus 18, along with Homa and Matt Fitzpatrick, who, you know, has had a rough year, but he's showed up in a couple of recent tournaments lately. So maybe kind of turning things around a little bit there. So, yeah, interesting to see how quickly that one double will change things on the betting odds.
Yeah, and Rory's still 10 shots back, by the way, and remains 18-1 to win this tournament, which is saying a lot. Rory, by the way, currently playing number four. He starts par, birdie, par. We have one day game in Major League Baseball, the Battle of Chicago, Jeff. We are in the middle of the second inning, and the Chicago White Sox have a 2-0 lead on the Cubs. That's Cade Horton pitching for the Cubs, and saw Miguel Vargas hit a two-run shot in the top of the first. So White Sox leading that one 2-0. Cubs about to bat at the bottom of the second.
Yeah, and on this one, noteworthy, when Horton made his debut on Saturday, he had an opener in front of him against the Mets. Today, they had him start straight up. And I'm a little concerned about that if I have Horton, and that's because of the length. You know, if you have him in betting props, certainly to win props, that's going to lessen his chances to win because he doesn't come into the game with the lead. And obviously, he's actually behind right now, too. So I think that's something fantasy-wise. He was our big topic of Fab discussion last weekend. He was the biggest bids in Fab betting in leagues that we play in, like the NFBC. So only one strikeout through two innings, 5 hits allowed also from Horton. So little concerning if you kind of invested a lot in Horton.
Yeah, and despite that 2-0 deficit, Cubs still minus 130 on the live money line. White Sox plus 100 if you like them to hang on to this lead for 8 more innings, Jeff. We will see. Let's talk about the night slate. A lot of big games this weekend. It's rivalry weekend in Major League Baseball. And we will start with where our normal producer, Michael Cohen, is right now. Mets, Yankees, Juan Soto making his return to Yankee Stadium. We get to see Tyler McGill taking on Carlos Rodon. Mets minus 142 on the money line here, Jeff. Total sitting at 9. I know you have a McGill prop that you're taking a look at.
Yeah, I like Tyler McGill. He's done really well this year, but I think this is a tough ask for him. Yankees, they're going to enjoy coming back home after that West Coast swing, playing at T-Mobile just over the week, earlier in the week. Maybe the toughest place in baseball to hit, especially for right-handed hitters.
Yep.
You go into Yankee Stadium where the sight lines are considerably better. Yankees have a 352 WOBA against righties, 128 WRC+. So as superb as McGill has been this year, I think, you know, 29.5% K percentage, 3.10 ERA. I think this is a really tough ask. One thing I do worry about McGill is he does walk too many hitters to begin with at 9.7%. Yankees are over 10% walkers against righties. So I am going to bet the over Tyler McGill 2.5 walks at plus 115. I'm going to avoid the Carlos Rodon. I usually like to be on Carlos Rodon. I think he's really turned a corner this year. I love that his velocity is up, his Ks are up. He's been pitching pretty well, most things considered, especially the underlying metrics. But the matchup today, the Mets have a 349 WOBA against lefties, and they only strike out 19.3% of the time. So normally I'd look for that. I'd search for that K prop from Rodon. I'm going to avoid it today.
Apologies, by the way, I did misspeak when I introduced this game. The New York Yankees are the home favorites, minus 142. I know that number now up to minus 148, actually, over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. And you mentioned Carlos Rodon, Jeff. I know he was somebody a couple weeks ago we talked about as an AL Cy Young long shot you might have some interest in. Now 50-1 at DK.
Yeah, and some of that is some pitchers are falling by the wayside, but it's going to be tough to keep up. I don't know if you watched much of the Hunter Brown, Jacob DeGrom matchup yesterday. Whew, that was fun. And Hunter Brown only burnished his credentials there after that outing. Even in the loss, he looked great. He's definitely emerged as one of those leading contenders. So we'll see. Again, if you're looking for some deeper value, I think Rodon could be a fun one. But, I mean, there's a number of guys to overcome, including another guy we'll be talking about later in the segment.
Yeah, Hunter Brown, by the way, 4-1 to win that Cy Young Award. Tarik Skubal still the favorite at plus 180. Chris Sale taking on Garrett Crochet tonight. The Braves are on the road at the Chicago White Sox. Crochet himself 4-1 to win the AL Cy Young Award in that inner circle. Looking at the line here, pretty close on the money line. Red Sox minus 115, total sitting at 8. What do you like in this one, Jeff?
Okay, so the handedness matters here on this one here. Both Sale and Crochet are lefty, obviously. And the Braves have had some, you know, positive things happen recently, but not against lefties. If you go back to a week ago, the series against the Reds, Andrew Abbott pitched very well against them. Nick Lodolo pitched very well against them. Both were good under games, at least until the ninth inning when those relievers got involved in that the Lodolo start. But point being is, I think that was 2-2 in the ninth in that one there. So I don't expect a whole lot of runs scored in this game. I really like the under at 8, minus 118. I'd bet under on some team totals, especially on the Atlanta side. And I probably look for some positive Crochet props as well. I don't know if I'm going to bet the side. And the reason for that is that Chris Sale has been very good recently too. He actually has, even though he's 1-3 and his ERA isn't great right now, sitting currently at 3.97. You think that's kind of pedestrian. He hasn't allowed more than two earned runs since April 13th. So I would go with the under 8 at minus 118. And I also kind of dig into some of the other K props against lefties. Atlanta 272 WOBA, that's 25th in baseball, 23.3 K percentage. You'll notice too that WOBAs versus lefties are a lot lower than they are against righties. So just keep that in mind when you're looking at scale. But those are the ones. If you're looking for like a strikeout prop for either Sale or Crochet, it's over 7.5 at minus 125 for Sale, over 6.5 minus 165 for Crochet. Maybe you want to do an alt line. Maybe you try to find the over 7.5 and see if you're interested in getting some plus money.
All right, let's try to hit a couple more games here, Jeff, before we give you our G-Bank best bets of the night. Cleveland Guardians, road favorites at Cincinnati tonight, minus 125 on that money line, total up at 9. Tanner Bibee going up against Brady Singer. I know you're looking at a home run prop, Jeff, coming off a big hit yesterday.
Yeah, Vlad Guerrero was good to us yesterday. And Zach Littell, for that matter, was very good to us. Two more homers allowed for Littell. And again, we're going to target the pitcher. I think the bloom's coming off the rose for Brady Singer. He got off to a good start to the season, got bombed by the Astros last time out. And remember, he had a 10-run lead before he threw a pitch, and then he couldn't get through the third inning. The four earned runs the time before that, he's allowed a homer in each of his last six outings. Five of those six home runs have been by left-handed hitters. So J-Ram, Jose Ramirez counts as a left-handed hitter. He's a switch hitter. In Great American Ballpark, we really like that porch in right field. I'm going to go Jose Ramirez anytime homer at plus 280. He's not even the shortest odds for anytime homers for the Guardians, actually. Believe it or not, Kyle Manzardo's even got a little bit of a shorter one at plus 275. If you're looking for maybe a little longer odds, maybe go Bo Naylor at plus 370 or Carlos Santana at plus 330.
All right, real quick, Jeff, we need like 15 seconds here. I want to squeeze in Cardinals Royals. What do you like in this game? I know you're looking at the total.
Yeah, I'm going against the Royals lineup here. They've been really struggling lately, 26 and WOBA against righties. So let's just go the under in this game, under 8.5, minus 115.
All right, it's time for our G-Bank best bets of the night to finish out the show. They're brought to you by G-Bank. You can get the G-Bank Visa Signature Card today, right now, in fact. Most credit cards, they treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances. That's even when you put your own money on the card. But G-Bank treats gaming transactions as purchases, so you're saving 3 to 5% on cash advance fees on gaming transactions right there. Also, with G-Bank, you're earning 1% cash back rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions, and 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. You can apply now over at vsin.com/gbank. That's vsin.com/gbank. Jeff, your G-Bank best bet of the night, please.
All right, we already went over the point pretty thoroughly, so I'll just say it real quick. Braves Red Sox under 8 runs, minus 118.
Okay, I am going back to the NBA, as I typically do. We're throwing out another plus money prop here. Miles McBride over 1.5 threes, plus 165. It's a little bit of a stab, but it's gone over this number in each of the last two games, three of the last five, four times already in the playoffs. It's a good price for a guy who tends to play with a ton of confidence in these games at Madison Square Garden. That's going to wrap up the show. It's going to wrap up the week for us here on Prop Points. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. We got Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard at 4 p.m. And make sure you stick around tonight for VSiN Primetime coming up at 7. Talk to you on Monday.